everybody. My name is Frank Ferrante, and I'm currently touring the country in my one-man show, An Evening with Groucho. And you are listening to Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave Standby on UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, shalom, goddammit, welcome everyone. This is Rabbi Saul Solomon, the founder and spiritual leader of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And I am so excited, I am so delighted to be talking with Groucho Marx. Well, not exactly, not really. I wish I could have talked to Groucho Marx, but he's been dead for quite a while, so that's not going to happen. However, the next best thing is to talk to a person who has been impersonating Groucho Marx for many, many years, since he was in his early 20s. He went off Broadway in a show by the son of Groucho Marx called Groucho, A Life in Review. He also did The Coconuts off Broadway, and he is still, to this day, touring as Groucho Marx. His name is Frank Ferrante. He's also an actor and a director. He does other things, but the most important thing are the Groucho-esque things, which we are asking Frank Ferrante about. Shalom, Frank!
Shalom, Rabbi. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a joy. So, when was the first time you ever did a Groucho Marx impersonation?
I bet I was 10 years old, and it was probably for Halloween, 10 or 11 years old.
And was it just a voice thing, or did you put on a mustache? I mean, what did you do?
I did the whole shebang. I saw A Day at the Races that year. I was completely thrilled by these madmen. And I started reading all about Groucho Marx and the Marx Brothers and other comedians of that era. It became a real study for me. And I thought it'd be a fun thing to do. The Marx Brothers were so free and anarchic and wild. It appealed to me.
And was this about the time when they had that the resurgence when, because there was a while, nobody really cared that much, and then they brought animal crackers back to California, and then that became, was that around that era?
Well, I think the interest started even before the Animal Crackers was re-released in 74. Groucho was, it was that era. It was early 70s. But Groucho was still on the scene. His movies were on television regularly. And this is when we had four channels.
Right.
So there'd be Marx Brothers Week. And then you'd have You Bet Your Life on daily in reruns in the early 70s from around 1974. And Groucho was also in his 80s at that time making public appearances and television appearances, like on DeCabot and Johnny Carson and Merv Griffin and Mike Douglas. And he was also received an honorary Academy Award that year, an honorary in 74, an honorary Emmy. The French government honored him in 1972 with their highest honors. So Groucho was very much part of the scene in the early 70s. So a lot of kids like myself were really very aware of Groucho.
So take us through this transition, Frank Ferrante, of being like a 10-year-old kid, steeping yourself in the culture of these great comedians of the era, going into high school, and then already in high school you got to be in Minnie's Boys, right?
That's right. That's right, I did. That's true. And the teacher there knew I was a fan of the Marx Brothers, and I loved. I was doing theater there since I was a sophomore. And he expressly picked that piece, which was written by Groucho's son and Arthur Marx and Robert Fisher, and it was Minnie's Boys. That was done in 1970, and this is now 1980. I was a kid. I was 17 years old doing the show, and it was so much fun. And who knew that 6 years from that high school production, I would be in New York in a show written by Arthur Marx.
Well, that's what I really would love to say. How do you make this from just doing a school, a high school show, a musical, to being suddenly off Broadway, dealing with the guy who wrote that play, dealing with a son of Groucho Marx, and you being the guy? What happened in those 6 years?
In those 6 years, I kept doing shows, so I was learning, and I went to the University of Southern California, and I studied theater there my last 2 years at SC. And I had a brilliant mentor, a teacher, an older professor who had been at USC for 4 decades. And he said to me, Frank, what do you want to do? We'll help you out. I said, well, I love comedy. I love the vintage comedy. I would love to do a show about Groucho Marx. I saw a show that I wasn't crazy about, in which someone portrayed Groucho. I thought I could do a better job. He said, well, why don't we, well, let's do it. Find a script. We'll help you put it on here on campus. We'll give you find a script, which I eventually did through Elaine Stritch, the Broadway.
Wait a minute. How did you know Elaine Stritch?
Well, I didn't know Elaine Stritch, but I had a friend that knew that her late husband did a show about Groucho. And so I stalked Elaine Stritch. I would type letters and mail her letters, and we'd write back and forth the old-fashioned way.
Oh.
And eventually she came in 1983 or so. She came to Los Angeles, to Burbank, to do a Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And I'm in college, and I thought, you know what? We've been corresponding. I want to seal the deal. I'll send a note back to Elaine and let her know that I'd be interested in, again, using this script. All profits are going to a charity, and it's a harmless endeavor, and I appreciate her support.
Right.
And so I send the note back, and she sends a note back to me saying, I'll meet you after the show, and she met me after the Johnny Carson taping, and she gave me her blessing and approval to use the script, which is an early version of what I tour with the last 15 years. So that was my connection to Elaine Stritch. She really had a hand in helping me with my career.
Oh, bless her. Have you corresponded? Have you kept up with her over the years? I mean, she's still obviously out there.
She's retired now to Michigan.
Right.
And I don't know if she'd even remember. It's been so many years. But I did meet her once after that when she was in Showboat on Broadway, and again thanked her for that.
I'm so
very grateful for her kindness. So I had a lot of chutzpah, as you'd say, Rabbi. And,
but this particular script that you did in university at USC was not what you wound up off Broadway with in 1987 or
86,
right?
No, but there's a connection. I put on this one-man show that Elaine Stritch helped me to provide it for me. I made some minor changes, but in the audience at USC was I invited everyone who knew Groucho, from Lucille Ball to Jack Lemmon to all his workmates and family. The ones that ended up showing up out of the 150 that I invited were three of the most significant. His son,
Arthur.
Groucho's son, Arthur Marx, the playwright. Groucho's daughter, Miriam Marx Allen, his daughter. And Maury Riskin, who wrote
Animal Crackers,
Night at the Opera. One of Groucho's closest friends and one of the last surviving Marx Brothers writers.
Now, by the way, at this point, when you were doing this in the school, Groucho was gone?
Groucho died in 1977.
77, all right.
This is 1985.
Yeah.
So okay. 8 after Groucho's death.
Got it, okay.
So they show up, and it's a packed house. And I'd broken the show in once in a church hall, you know, just to break it in as part of, and then this was the big coming out, the big official premiere on my campus in 85, and they're all there. And the show received a standing ovation. I have it on videotape. I introduced these three significant people in Groucho's life.
Dude, you have to YouTube this. You realize you have to put this on YouTube, right?
Well, I've got a lot of unusual film, so.
Yeah, okay, I'm just saying. But, all right, so, yeah, you introduced them, and then there was
what happened? Arthur Marx says, if I ever do a show about, he was the playwright, he had the show tooling around with other performers, and had never gone to New York. He said, if I ever do a show about my father again, if I produce it again, I would like to use you. So I graduate from USC, and after the summer, I'm in Kansas City in a dinner theater doing his show, Groucho, in which I played Groucho Marx, my hero, from age 15 to 85.
8 to 85? And you were what, 21 years old?
Yeah, 22 at the time.
God, okay.
I know, it was insane. So that show, the gentleman who owned the very successful dinner theater, they had two very, very successful dinner theaters in Kansas City, they wanted to produce in New York. And so they took the next year to raise over $500,000 to put it on in New York. And within a year of that Kansas City production, just about within a year of my graduation from USC, I played off-Broadway.
Incredible.
Into a life in review. At age 23, I was. And it was very heady stuff and very, very thrilling. And that was the beginning for me. And the show received rave reviews and ran for 250-plus performances.
You won a Theater World Award for that. You were nominated for a couple of other awards for doing it. I mean, it was a big, big thing.
It was a top, you know, Clive Barnes of the New York Post called it the sleeper of the year. He was, you know, always picked as a top 10. It's funny, David Brenner just passed away. I remember he was on the Howard Stern show in 86. And I remember they were talking about Jackie Mason's show, which was, at the time, playing the show Life and Review. And this is before the show was, Stern was national. This is before, you know, the internet. But it was an endorsement that meant a lot to me. And I really got to meet a lot of my heroes when I was in New York, from Charles Chandler.
This is why I definitely want to ask Frank Ferrante about meeting some of the legends of Hollywood and of comedy during this period when you were doing, plus actually any period since then. But who are some of the legends that you met, and maybe some anecdotes or funny stories or just memories of meeting these people?
Well, I remember being at the Carnegie Deli in New York and having lunch with Groucho's son Arthur after we'd opened. And we were having lunch with Henny Youngman in Maury Amsterdam.
Oh, my God.
Henny Youngman, the king of the one-liner, Maury Amsterdam, from the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yucca Puck. Oh, my God, yes.
I had a wonderful, you know, and Henny was very, very complimentary. He says, you know, you're better than the original, he said. Just not even remotely true. There's only one Groucho, but he meant that he really enjoyed the work. And I had lunch with Henny Youngman at the Friars Club after, you know, some years later. At the very end of our lunch, he turned to me and said, "Frank, if you ever need a friend, get a dog."
So, you know, that was our Henny.
So yeah, I got to meet a lot of these wonderful people. You know, I used to have lunch with Milton Berle and.
Well, tell me, what was it like having lunch with Milton Berle?
He was, you know, if you know, you were an audience for Uncle Milty. He was. Larger than life, he was relentless. He was crusty and angry and funny, and I loved it because he was just such a survivor and a fighter. And my favorite moments were when I was with him alone at lunch. And he wasn't fully on, and I could let him know how much I admired his fight and talent and his attack. And I saw he was a real. I saw him as an older man. In his late 80s, perform, and I got teary watching him because it was so moving. It was like going back in the time capsule to 1937, seeing the young man kill an audience. He was brilliant. He knew he had his set ad libs, you know, scripted ad libs, and then he'd have his own improv. He'd pull, and he was masterful. Even then, you could just feel why he became so popular, why audiences for a period of time loved him, and why he popularized the medium of television with his show.
Uncle Milty. And I have to ask, I know it's a terrible question, but did you ever follow him to the bathroom, to the urinal, and check?
No, I didn't check, but he himself told me the story about being in the sauna with his friends, and of course he was renowned to have a particularly...
enormous...
with this rabbi, enormous...
kosher salami. Let's yes.
We can say member.
Oh, member. Yes, you can. I have many members of my temple, but it's not quite the same meaning. Yes, okay.
And the joke, you know, the story goes, he's sitting there with a friend, a friend of his across the way goes, "Hey, Milton, I think I have more than you have."
Oh, boy.
And Uncle Milty is there and says, "Oh, yeah, okay, we'll see." And then another friend of Milton says, "Just take out enough to win." So that's the story. I
Well, that's like the also...
I watched it a bit for your listenership.
No, that's fine. It reminds me, Richard Pryor used to tell the joke of the two black men fishing. You know this one?
I don't.
When they're supposed to be, you know, they're going fishing and whatever, and they're always trying to one-up each other, as it were, and they both have to take a whiz. And the first one says, "Oh, my God, you know, they're standing on this bridge over the water. And he says, this water's cold." And the other guy goes,
deep.
"Yeah, and deep, too. You know the joke, yes." Thank you. I need a laugh track for that. Hold on. Thank you, Richard Pryor.
Thank you, Rife. So Berle was great, and I liked, you know, I liked being around these guys who I admired when I was a boy. I met...
Who else?
Sid Caesar was a great one who just passed away.
There's a picture of Frank Ferrante on the internet, as a matter of fact. I know the internet's now. I'm figuring it out. And there's a picture of you standing with Sid Caesar on the web. So what are your memories of him?
Well, he was, you know, he was serious. He was a recovering, you know, alcoholic, and he went through a lot of difficult years when he was doing your show of shows. And for the last 30 years of his life, he was just keeping it together and was... delighting, I think, to a certain degree, in the fact that he was healthy. I'm sure it was frustrating not to be doing as much work as he used to do, but YouTube and your shows and just watch his sketches, you know, or look up a recent obituary on Sid Caesar. He influenced everything from Saturday Night Live to current stand-up comics and comic actors.
And let us not forget his ritual appearances on the Chabad telethons every year.
Don't forget those.
Cannot forget. He would do the same bit over and over and over again, but with talking in the funny accents. But it was funny. It was good to see him, you know?
Yes. And he was still doing that up until a few years ago, but...
He's probably still doing it now.
Yes, he doesn't stop. It's like that's what they said about Henny Youngman. He just kept going, whether he got laughs or not. He just kept going, did not care.
That's what I do, I'm afraid.
You could not stop. You could not stop, Mr. Youngman. Anyway, so...
Yeah, who else? Who else? Other people.
Sid.
More Sid, please tell.
Well, Sid came by the table and just looked at me. I was in my early 30s. And said, it was very strange. It was this odd sage moment. And he says to me, don't punish yourself. Whatever you do, don't punish yourself. I spent my entire life punishing myself. And he walked away. His life had been distilled in some, you know, to a great degree to that. Because he was rough on himself, and he didn't think he deserved his success, and he drank too much, took pills, and...
But by then, he was already healthy, and now he understood, I had not spent those years punishing myself, I would be healthier, I would have worked more later on, blah, blah, blah.
And he hurt a lot of people in his family. He knew that, and I think he was trying to share that wisdom with us younger folk who were his age when he was at his peak. So, I mean, it's been a fascinating... I met Groucho. I saw Groucho in person.
I thought you said it was way before. Oh, so you did actually... Ooh, tell.
So we need to go back even before the college show. I'm a kid in a small town in California. I grew up in a cul-de-sac in this little sleepy, quaint town called Sierra Madre. It's near Pasadena.
Oh, it's kind of a treasure, yeah. Sorry. Yes.
A little bit of a hamlet. You know, it's very... And so my father took the day. There was this kid, probably the only Jewish kid in Sierra Madre. He was my best friend, and he said, "Frank, put on the television set, and you got to see what's on." It was A Day at the Races, which I referenced before. And so that's when I first discovered the Marx Brothers, and I became a fan at that point. And I was always collecting Marx Brothers memorabilia. It comes in the library all the time. And Groucho, who lived in Beverly Hills, was going to make a personal personal appearance in Los Angeles. So my father took the day off of work and to take me to see my hero. So we go down to the Ambassador Hotel, which is no longer, it was the Coconut Grove nightclub back in the heyday of Hollywood. So Groucho's going to promote a book there. We show up at noon, no Groucho.
Uh-huh.
3 hours later, he shows up and he looks much more frail than any image I'd had of him, that I'd seen of him on television. He's shuffling and he's glassy-eyed and he could barely move. And everyone is shooed away from him. He's there with his
Aaron Fleming, right?
Aaron Fleming. But I stuck to him like a duckling, as if I was part of his tiny entourage, his entourage of four. And I just walk right behind him as if I'm entitled to be there, as if I'm supposed to be there. I've got my Groucho book with me, The Secret Word is Groucho. The year is 1976. I'm 13 years old, and I just, no one's going to stop me from being next to my hero. And he had tens of thousands of fans like me, young kids like me that loved him, saw him as a grandfather figure. He spoke for all of us. He was an alter ego for all of us. He said things we all wanted to say. He did things we all wanted to do. He was brash and irreverent, and he resonated with us, and he affected us. So there he is. He's shuffling to the podium, and I sit at his feet, and, you know, he can barely speak. He mumbles for the first part of his presentation. Can you hear me out there? Can you hear me out there? Doesn't say no joke. Where now it's like, oh, no, my hero from Duck Soup is going to,
right,
you know, pass out. And finally, I asked the first question. I asked him, well, what do you think about Nixon? Right. And I knew what he thought about Nixon. I said, well, you know, this is a boy's way of riling, getting him riled up and angry. And so his first response was, I hate Nixon. Nixon ought to be in jail. And, of course, the audience went crazy, all the teenagers. This is, you know, post-Vietnam.
Sure.
But the great responses that I recall, and I actually referenced in my show, someone said to Groucho, are you making any new Marx Brothers movies?
Yeah.
He looked up slowly and said, No, I'm answering stupid questions. Thousand people just exploded. That's when we knew he was still there. And that woman said, "Groucho, what do you dream about?" He looked at her and said, "Not you."
Oh.
It was beautiful.
God bless
him. His body was shot, and he was slowing down, but he still had the capacity to get a one-liner out.
I mean, I have to admit, one of the funniest things I have still ever seen in my life is when Gilbert Gottfried used to do his version of old Groucho. Did you find that offensive, or are you okay with that?
You know, when I first heard it, it hurt my heart. I loved Groucho as a boy, but I knew what Gilbert was doing. So did Gilbert loved. We all loved him, and it was painful to watch Groucho enter extreme old age and weaken. We loved him, and I get what he was doing. In a way, when you tease like that, you're able to kind of release your own discomfort and pain with it. You know, Gilbert loved him, adores him.
So, and what's interesting is that I didn't realize
that
back in college, you were doing Groucho when you were 20 years old and he was 83. That's even more of a stretch than Gilbert making fun of him when he was 35 and et cetera. You were doing old Groucho back then.
Well, I think, I was doing it as part of a show, and Gilbert was doing it as part of his act.
As a spoof, I know.
It's very different. His is a great parody, and what I'm doing is I'm trying to actually play him within the context of a play.
And let's also make clear that the big off-Broadway show that you did back in the mid-1980s was Groucho, A Life in Review. That is not the show that you are doing now. This new show, or the show you've been touring with, is something that you created. Where's that script from, and how is it different?
It's the one I started out with in school and have rewritten and evolved over the last almost 30 years. It's An Evening with Groucho, and for your listeners who are interested in seeing me, it's eveningwithgroucho.com. You can see where I'm going, and hopefully I'll be in your area.
Now,
the show focuses on the younger Groucho. It's very energetic. It focuses on the Groucho of the 1920s and 30s. The premise is, what if Groucho Marx had put on a one-man show in 1934, which he never did. He was always working with his brothers. So keeping with that, there are anecdotes related to the Marx brothers, his brothers Harpo and Chico, Zeppo and Gummo, Charlie Chaplin and W.C. Fields, and his famous foil in the movies, Margaret Dumont.
Margaret Dumont.
And there are one, great lines like, "I can see you right now in the kitchen bending over a hot stove, but I can't see the stove." I do a whole homage to their relationship. And so, but there are songs from his Broadway career, like Lydia the Tattooed Lady and Hooray for Captain Spaulding.
I think what's interesting is you're 51, 52 years old now. Now you have to play Groucho. Sorry?
Yeah, I'm 50. We'll be 50.
Oh, you'll be 50. I'm sorry. You're 50. Wait, weren't you born in 1963?
I'm 51 next month.
Oh, 51 next month. Okay. Anywho, don't throw me off track, goddammit. Now I need to call on God to remind me what the hell I was going to ask. Oh, but it's interesting that now you're 51-ish, and you're going to be playing Groucho younger. How interesting, how weird is that for you?
I know. Well, when I was 22, I was playing him from age 15 to 85. Well, I'm a very young 50, I have to say. I jump around like crazy, left hand in good shape. And this is about the age he was doing the Day at the Races, not the opera. It was in mid to late 40s.
So he was still kind of a spring chicken he was still pretty much in his prime at that point.
I think so. I think he was fantastic. I think he was still his prime throughout.
Wait, could you talk into the telephone a little better? You're more muffled now. I don't know what you did there.
How's that?
Much better. There we go. You're turning into old Groucho in front of our ears. Be careful with that. Anyway, we're talking with Frank Ferrante here, who is going to be doing, by the way, Evening with Groucho, May 3rd in Freeport, New York, in Long Island, beautiful Long Island, at the High School Auditorium in Freeport on South Brookside Avenue. For more information about that, as he said, go to eveningwithgroucho.com.
The highlight of An Evening with Groucho is the improv and the audience interaction. About a third of the show is improv-based. So you have the anecdotes and songs and one-liners routine, but what keeps it current and fun and exciting, what I think really inspires the response it gets, is the improv. I get an audience of all ages out there.
Yeah. Have you ever been thrown by a question?
No, I've figured ways to deal with most questions when I'm in action.
Well, what's an example of a time when you got a question you didn't expect and you came right back and killed?
Generally, or I find a way to work it in some way. I mean, my job is to deal with whatever is thrown my way when I'm doing that show.
Sure.
It's my job to be on top of it, to stay in control. It's me and a piano player, so people are coming to see how I'm going to deal with anything from a heckler to a funny response. You know, and I bring a kid on stage sometimes, and they're all ages.
Oh, of course, yes.
You don't know what you're going to get, and that's the fun for me. I love not knowing how the show will go. And my job is to kill. My job is to get as many laughs as possible. And it's a belly laugh show. But it's also, as I get older, I've always loved the improv part of the show. And I love singing songs the way Groucho loves singing songs in movies. But I really like the storytelling. I like being able to really lay back and tell interesting stories that are new for an audience.
What?
In his style.
Can you give us one example, to whet people's appetite to go see An Evening with Groucho? What's a story that you tell in the show about Groucho?
Oh, well, you'd ask me to. Do you want me to do a clip from the show, or?
Oh, you could do that, or do it in your own voice. That's up to you.
Well, there's a great story that I've added recently. That is the end of Groucho's, and it's there's a lot of rat-a-tat-tat comedy, but there are also some more moving moments in the show. One of the last stories in the show, Groucho writes about in his autobiography, Groucho and Me, and he goes, recently I was in State Street in Chicago, and a middle-aged couple approaches me, and they start to cycle me, and they go around me two or three times, and finally the woman approaches me, and she says to me, "You're him, aren't you?" I nodded, and then she tenderly touches me on the arm and says, "Please don't die. Just keep on living." Who could ask for anything more? That's one of the sweeter stories.
Yeah, that's actually not uproariously funny, but very, very sweet, actually.
So that's an anecdote. And then there's the comic story, I was at the Sands Point Beach Club on Long Island as I approached the manager. Behind the desk, he says to me, "Mr. Marks, I'm delighted to have you here." I said, "Well, I'm delighted to be here." He said, "I'm delighted that you're delighted." Everybody was delighted. Then he found out I was Jewish. He said, "Mr. Marks, I'm terribly sorry, but you cannot use our pool. We do not allow Jews to swim in our pool." I said, "What about my son? He's only half Jewish. Can he go into the water up to his knees?" There's that story.
That's a classic. Every Jew has heard that story 4,000
right?
times, but we love it. Speaking of it, let me ask you, Frank Ferrante, the thing that shocks and saddens and disturbs me about this whole thing is that you are not Jewish.
No, I'm not.
Bothers me, though. You were, in fact, raised Catholic. You went to Catholic school. How did you get into Jewish comedy, the rhythms of it, the pulse of it? That's not easy to do. How did you, how did you become Groucho and get into all that, not being of the tribe?
It's a good question. My best friend was Jewish.
That helps.
Was a cultural Jew and was a practice. After his father died, his mother married a rabbi, and I was around the world. Many of my friends early on were Jewish, so I was giving a bit of an education on the culture and the comedy. It's just the greatest comedians come from the tribe, in my opinion. All these greats.
Yes.
So I felt kindred, and I felt I related to it, and I identified with the comedy and those young guys like myself who loved it. And I grew up listening to the rhythms and appreciating the directness of it, the brashness of it, the outsider looking in approach that was taken. Most of us feel like outsiders. I did.
Oh, for sure.
I still come from an immigrant family.
You're Italian, right?
A lot of the Jewish Americans, can relate to the experience as I did. My grandparents came over and were low on the ladder socially and had to work their way up and worked hard. And so I found a relatable culture.
Absolutely.
I felt kindred to it. So, and then I read a great deal and studied the culture and the
are you waiting for? Why don't you drop the Jesus thing and convert? Come over to the light side. We'd be happy to have you, believe me. You're artistic, you're creative, you're smart. We want you.
The Catholics don't want me. It's okay. So I'm there.
See?
Please take me. Let's time. Let's let the ceremony begin.
I'll give you some lessons. Have you been circumcised?
Let me check. Hold on.
Okay.
This may take a while.
That's an Uncle Milty kind of line. Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Answer is yes.
And the answer is yes. So you see, we don't even have to do anything terribly painful, except you have to listen to Barbara Streisand records. But we can get you through that.
I'm an aficionado for the food. Hello, everybody. This is Frank Ferrante, and I am now touring the country in my one-man show, An Evening with Groucho. And you are listening to Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Hey, I have to ask you, one thing that's in your bio, Frank Ferrante, is that you were actually name-checked in a Jeopardy question. What was the question?
He took his performance of Groucho Marx to... it was an off-Broadway category. He took his performance to New York in 19 of Groucho Marx in 1986.
And did somebody get the answer right?
Someone got it right.
Mit Mazel, mit Glück.
I can't believe it. And that was when I think it was back in 2004.
Oh, so it wasn't even during like 1980 something.
Ken something. It was the question was asked. It was during the big. That guy was killing it.
Ken Jennings, and he knew that. Wow!
It was during his run, and he didn't get it right, but someone else got it right.
Oh, probably someone Jewish. I'll bet you.
Outside, my grandmother would have done that one.
Wait, I can't hear you talking to the phone.
I'm talking to the phone.
It's a telephone. It has two sides. You got to talk into the lower side.
I'm using an iPhone.
All right.
I'm caught up with you.
Well, so stop using your eye and use your mouth. That's what the telephone is for.
There you go.
Now, let's just take a moment or two with Frank Ferrante to remind people that he doesn't just do Groucho. You have appeared in other plays, other roles. You also direct. What's one or two of your favorite roles that are non-Groucho?
I don't know, but you know what? I'm glad your questions are so long because I can Facebook in between. So this is great. No, my favorite...
You don't know how long my questions are. Longer than Milty's. Oh, yeah.
Yes. You are correct, sir. I loved doing Laughter on the 23rd Floor.
Oh, yes.
In Philadelphia, which was fun, I guess.
That's a Neil Simon play about, Sid Caesar types and the whole Your Show of Shows era, yes?
Well, that was fun. I do a character named Caesar, which is a Latin lover character for the last 15 years, and a Cirque show. It's like Cirque du Soleil, and it's done in San Francisco, Seattle. I did it in Amsterdam. And for the last 15 years, 4 to 6 months a year, I play this outrageous character, over-the-top, interactive, improv-based character, a lot like Groucho in terms of the interaction, but my own creations, very... Latin lovers, Caesar. He loves everyone, men, women, dogs, doesn't care. And in the lounge suit, big hair, big mole, and
this is Cesar, is his name?
Yeah, his name is Caesar.
Caesar, sorry.
It takes place in a 100-year-old tent from Belgium. It's called a Spiegel tent. It's a beautiful venue. It's stained glass and hand carved wood. It's in the round, of course. It's a tent, and it's a vaudeville.
Yes, it's Teatro Zingzani. It has played in New York, as a matter of fact, yes.
There's been a version of it. You know, you find these tent shows starting to spring up. It's a popular form. It's acts from all over the world. Aerial, contortion, juggling, singing. I've done shows co-starring opposite Joan Baez, Lillian Montevecchi, the Tony Award-winning...
No, I just cannot see that. How and you and Joan Baez would interact within that... context. I mean, did she come out, sing a song to bring everybody down from the laughter, and then you come back out and wake everybody up? Is that how it worked? What was it?
Well, there's something to it. And she would sing a beautiful ballad, and she's got a great sense of humor. You know, before I knew her personally, I was a friend of hers. I always thought of her as the singer and the protester and the rights movement. You know, great activist, and she also has a brilliant body, sense of humor. So she always wanted to run away to the circus when she was a kid, and she got that chance. So she takes on a persona. She'll play the Contessa, and she'll do her thing. that show is called Teatro Zinzani. And in fact, they're opening a new tent in Chicago, which I'll be opening next year.
Oh, mit Mazel. And you just do Caesar there, or do you also do Groucho and Caesar in this?
I just do Caesar. It's got a bit of a following, and if you go to it's incredible. If you go into Seattle while I'm there, you'll see it on signs of buses and in town taxis and in the newspaper, and it's a very popular show, and the characters become quite popular. And I'm grateful to Groucho because as much as I love to interpret his life, it sure is refreshing to be able to do my own creation from scratch. And that's a fantasy I'd always had. I wanted to come up with my own thing like Groucho did. And so I had this opportunity to share his legacy with audiences and also come up with my own new invention, comic invention. And that is a delight. And I grew up, you know, as a boy reading about vaudeville, reading about these gypsy traveling performers, reading about all these great, wild, bizarre acts. And now I'm part of that world. It's a very tiny world in 2014, but it exists. This has become, you know, burlesque is back, and this vaudeville form has come back. And the more we look at our computer screens and our iPhones, the more I think there's a reaction and a need for live entertainment. And so I've been very fortunate, Rabbi, in that I've never, you know, I've been employed steadily.
People
appreciate this form.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's marvelous, and it's true, because there's every single thing now. People build movie theaters in their living rooms. So, movies, music, everything is one click of a button. The one thing that you cannot do at your home is, well, now, I mean, I guess people do concerts in their homes now, but you still have to go to the theater, to go to the burlesque, to a show. And, for example, on May 3rd, everybody can go to the Freeport High School Auditorium on South Brookside Avenue in Freeport, New York, to see An Evening with Groucho with our guest Frank Ferrante. And plus, look for him, go on his website, because he does tour all over the country, and you'll get to see him in the various Teatro Zinzani circus arenas as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before we let Frank Ferrante go, I do want to ask a little bit more about the whole Groucho connections and also some of the legends that you've talked to. But you were friends with Groucho's son, Arthur Marx, until his death in 2011. And you're still corresponding and friends with the daughter, Miriam. Is this correct?
That's true. Arthur considered me his closest friend, and it was mutual. And though we were 40 years plus apart in age, we were great pals. And once a week, on average, I would have lunch with him and talk to him all the time for 25 years.
Wow.
You know, when I met him, I was a kid, and he was in his 60s. And we worked together, and we put on shows together. We traveled to London together to put on the show. We were in New York together doing Groucho. We were in Dallas and
Dallas.
We went to different places to put on productions of the show, and we also put together a book together called in 2001 called Arthur Marx's Groucho: A Photographic Journey. And they were photos of there were negatives he had in canisters, and I saw them. I said, Arthur, we should print these out, and they're beautiful images of his father and family, behind the scenes shots. And we published that book. We had published in 2001. It's a coffee table book, and so we were very close. And I loved him, and we loved each other, and we were, you know, I was like a spirit, I was like a son to him, and he was like a pop to me. So it was a very difficult time when he was getting ill, but he had a good run. And Miriam, his Groucho's daughter, is still around, and she's going to be 87 in May. And I just have been visiting her once a week. She lives about an hour and a half away, and we're very close as well. So I think they early on saw my sincerity and my interest and appreciated me as the performer, but also as a person, and we developed personal relationships.
So who is controlling or will control the legacy?
You Bet Your Life.
You Bet Your Life. In other words, who is the custodian? Who's going to keep these things going and monitor them in that family? Is there a grandchild who's, you know, poised?
Well, not really. No, there is a board of Groucho Marx Productions, of which I am a member of the board, and it's Arthur. Caesar has given me authority to represent him, and so is Groucho's daughter. So I'm very much involved with that, and will be so as the years go on. You Bet Your Life is owned by another, not by Groucho Marx Productions. You know, I have some influence there, which makes me happy. I'd like to see him become more present within our culture and remain relevant. Luckily, he's out there and will be out there long after all of us are gone. But I'd like to, in a classy way, keep him visible to audiences and new audiences. Part of what I do with this show, I do this Groucho show maybe 30, 40 times a year, you know, one-nighters throughout the world. I'll be in Australia for a month in the summer. And part of the mission is to really share it with audiences that, you know, right now I speak to you from the Midwest in a small town, and I can't wait to do it because for many of them, this is brand new. Hmm. Groucho once said, there's no such thing as an old joke if you've never heard it before. And that's part of what this is going from town to town. I had a friend who said to me, a comedian said to me, Frank, you won't be satisfied until you played every town in the country. I said, well, there's some truth to that. I take great pride in sharing his genius. I mean, he's just, this persona is so great. And I take great pride in sharing my take on it. I keep working on it, evolving it, adding, subtracting, developing. So to answer your question, I'll be one of those. I'm certainly involved in keeping his legacy present.
As well you should, and I think that's wonderful. I'm going to ask our last question of Frank Ferrante. Do you have a single favorite Groucho moment? Either it could be from You Bet Your Life, it could also be from one of his movies, a recording, any particular moment.
I love this exchange because, you know, we use humor as a weapon, and I get it, in a defense and a deflection. There's a great story about Groucho Marx in 1936 making A Day at the Races, shooting A Day at the Races. And there was a scene in there in which they wallpaper up Margaret Dumont, I believe.
Yes.
It's a very complicated scene. There are lines in it, and there was a very complicated scene in A Day at the Races. And the director of that film was a gentleman by the name of Sam Wood. And I think they did more than 30 takes, and Groucho bobbled a line. And Groucho, they've been working all day, and he was generally on his mark, but he bobbled a line. And Sam Wood says publicly on the set, after Groucho bobbles a line, well, you can't make an actor out of clay. To which Groucho retorts, nor a director out of wood.
Ooh!
So, I mean, that's me, that kind of mind, you know, to say that about Sam Wood. I mean, he's so quick. And that's the kind of, I love how facile he was. And the fact that he was, never made it past sixth grade, that he was self-educated. It's a great American story. He was a fighting force of comedy.
And of course, he lost so much money in the Depression. I don't think he went completely broke, but he went back down to almost zero. And he battled back from that, and that made him pretty bitter and stingy in the later years, I guess.
Yeah, he was always conservative with his money. He came from a poor family. He lost $250,000 in the crash.
Which was how much of his income at that point?
That was everything. He lost everything. But luckily, he was employed. He was in 29. He was, you know, he was doing Broadway by night, making movies by day. So though he was wiped out, unlike most Americans, he was employed and was able to rebuild. But, you know, Groucho had a vaudevillian's mentality. There was always the thought that it would end, that if you stopped working for a year or two, you're wiped out. So he always had that sense that it could be over at any given point. You know, that's a freelancer's point of view.
Might as well ask you, Frank Ferrante. You live the actor's life, the performer, the director's life. Are you able to settle into a thing where you know you will work comfortably until you retire and you can retire, or will you never retire?
Well,
reasons
I would never,
beyond money.
And none of us retire willingly.
Right.
We retire if we can't do it, because I love to do it, and performers love what they do. Most creative folk do. And I want to do it until I drop dead on stage at age, you know, 98. But, you know, it's always a bit of a struggle to keep working and to keep opportunities coming in and to get opportunities. So I'm always, you know, and also I book way ahead, a year and a half. But you know what? It's that way for all of us. I mean, we're all in life.
Well, we feel very blessed to have Frank Ferrante here in the neighborhood with us. Remember, he's May 3rd at the Freeport High School Auditorium doing an Evening with Groucho. Check the website, eveningwithgroucho.com, for more details and also his travels all over the country and the various things that he does. All I can say, Frank, is that I hope you drop dead on stage at age 120. Forget 98. Make it 120 at least.
Thank you, Rabbi. I hope you'll be in the audience for that performance.
I hope so, too.
I'll get you comps. I'll get comps for you.
See? Good. We'll work it out. Frank, shalom. Thank you so much. Shalom.